Other than that, I mean, you know, what's going on? What do you say?
Buenas tardes.
And we'll be back.
Missed your favorite show? Not a problem. Go to www.ckut.ca and follow the link to CKUT's easy-to-use archives. Instructions are on the page. 2 months' worth of archives are stored in mono and half a month's worth in stereo.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal.
If you're having trouble, please email sys at ckut.ca. That's S-Y-S at ckut.ca.
Oh, yeah! I want to be your motivator.
CKUT Radio.
Radio. Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome back, warriors. Kwe tanse sego ani buju. Kwe ninda Luizi Pampometer, and I'm the host of this show, The Warrior Life. This podcast is a show about living the warrior life, a lifestyle that focuses on decolonizing our minds, bodies, and spirits, but at the same time, revitalizing our languages, cultures, and traditions. And it's also about asserting, living, and defending our sovereignty all over Turtle Island. And in the last few months, we have been focused on what is happening on the ground on Turtle Island, from Trans Mountain Pipeline on Shikwemeq territory, Coastal GasLink pipeline in Wet'suwet'en territory, to violent OPP interventions at 1492 Land Back Lane in Haudenosaunee territory, and the ongoing violence and terrorism against Mi'kmaq people from non-native fishermen. To say that we are fully engaged on the ground would be an understatement. As Native peoples, we all have a different role to play in defending the rights of our nations, which includes defense on the ground, supplying land defenders with food, providing research for advocacy, representing them with lawyers, raising funds, public education, and you name it. We're engaged at every level. And it doesn't matter what skill you bring. We're always stronger together with our nations when we wrap our arms around those who take the biggest risks on the front lines. And today's guest is one of those people who rallies around her nation every time in whatever way she can, and still finds time somehow to support and mentor other Native people, especially women, in similar struggles. Bev Jacobs is a dear friend who I have admired and followed for more years than I can count. She has represented a strong, powerful Native woman who's helped lift up an entire generation of people who have come behind her. Her work has always centered around ending gendered colonial violence and also restoring Indigenous laws and traditions, which is super important. Not only is she an associate prof and associate dean at Windsor University Law School, but she somehow also manages to practice law part-time from her home community of Six Nations. Many of you already know her and will remember her as the former president of the Native Women's Association of Canada, and you would have seen her work at the international level advancing Indigenous human rights. And she's won so many awards, I can't even list them all, but they include the Order of Canada, the Franco-German Prize in Human Rights, Governor General's Award, and many more, specifically for human rights and social justice. Now, Bev is heavily engaged in supporting the Haudenosaunee at 1492 Land Back Lane as the people on the ground try to protect what little land they have left from being developed and ultimately lost forever. I don't know how you even have time to be on this show, Bev, but I'm really thankful that you're here. Welcome to the Warrior Life podcast.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I'm
Thank you so much. And maybe you would like to introduce yourself the way you traditionally do, and maybe tell us a little bit about the nation that you're from.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'd like to introduce myself in my language first. Scano, Swakwego, Giaso, Gawankuse, Giangihaga, Nyagwait, Shouta, Haudenosaunee. So greetings of peace to everyone. I told you my real name, my Mohawk Bear Clan name, which is Gawankuse, and it means she's visiting. And the Mohawk Nation is part of the bigger Haudenosaunee Confederacy. And I live here in my community at Six Nations. Been away a few times to go to school in different universities and teach in different places. But this is my home. I grew up here and was always raised very traditionally in my community here. My family has always been, I've been ingrained, I guess, in our traditions for as long as I can remember, being raised with our traditional council, with, you know, my uncles being Confederacy chiefs, and my grandmother was a clan mother, and my aunt is now, and being a faith keeper now in the community as well is really important to me. That's what grounds me. So that's the most important. So that I was raised with that, and I didn't realize how much I was taught or even what I was raised with until I went to law school, and then realized, you know, how colonial law has really been a tool to try to erase us as a people. So it actually made me a lot stronger, even in identifying and relating to my own Haudenosaunee laws.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you raised that, because one, I found the same thing when I went to law school. I found myself thanking myself, oh my goodness, I learned so much from my family. If I hadn't been grounded before I went to law school, I could have been lost in this mythology and ideology and not have known the difference. So like you, I'm really thankful. And it's clearly you were well grounded before you went to law school with that kind of background in your family.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, look at people from a wide spectrum in terms of all the different Native people doing different things, you know, at all different ages, and they look up to them and the work that they do. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about your path to where you are today. Like, what was your journey like? And you know, what are some of the challenges that people can expect along the way?
Yeah, it's been a pretty amazing journey, I would say. A lot of lessons learned along the way, which is, I think, part of the biggest part of the journey. But I think what sparked everything really was, you know, my mom died really young in 1989. I think I was only like 20, 24. Mm. And then the Oka crisis happened. So the summer of 1990, and I was already thinking then, actually I was thinking of it in high school, even way back then about going to law school. But I had a baby right after high school. My daughter was born right after finishing high school. That was like the first thing I wanted to make sure I finished high school before I had any babies. So so the choice that I made to go into law was a result of my mother's death and thinking about life, and that life's too short. And that when the Oka crisis happened, and being very angry and thinking, well, what's my responsibility? It became more about what should I be doing And so that's when I decided, and my daughter was by that time was 7 years old. And so it was a journey from there. And it felt like I ended up in places, in different places, different spaces where I would meet leaders. I would meet, you know, different Indigenous people, different activists. And I would be really open all the time to learning, to listening, to really paying attention to what the issues were. And then once I got into law school and starting to understand, you know, how those laws had an impact on our people. And like, I always think that sometimes it's creator's plan, right, to put you in these places and in leadership places. And it was just, okay, all right, this is what I got to do. Or someone says, come on, we need you to speak up over here. And it was actually, there was a few mentors that I had, like Patricia Montour, Sylvia Miracle. They were the ones to teach me about having a voice, because I was really quiet. I was a pretty quiet person before I went to law school, and I found my voice. And once I found my voice, it was like, wow, I was taught a lot, and they were the ones to help me to remind me about using my voice. And that's part of our laws as Haudenosaunee people, is you know, being very good orators, being able to speak and being able to talk about our laws in a really powerful way. So, you know, finishing law school, I didn't want to practice law. I thought, how could I be ingrained in a system where it's not helping our people, and in fact it's oppressive? And that's when I decided to do my master's, and that's when I focused on the great law, on Haudenosaunee law, and identifying, and became right, you know, using my master's, using my education to learn about our, even more about our own law and international law. And that international, that is our law, when we brought together through the great law, is bringing our nations together. And so, like, again, it was just being put into those different spaces and places and finding my voice and presenting, and just became bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger. And then getting involved into politics, you know, as president of the Native Women's Association of Canada. And it was just, you know, leading up to that, I was a consultant and doing, you know, work across the country, and leading into working with Amnesty International on the Stolen Sisters report, and meeting with families across the country who were, you know, in trauma and having to deal with that emotional, spiritual, the traumas that were happening. So that ended up becoming my clients were all dealing with trauma, whether it was families of missing and murdered, whether it was residential school survivors. That became also, you know, the work I was doing, and then using my own experiences to help with healing, because I too have been, you know, a product of violence from a child, and then in violent relationships, and having to learn about what that is on a very personal level. And then also having to, you know, my own family member, my own cousin being murdered in here at Six Nations was also very traumatic. And that was right near the end of my term at the Native Women's Association of Canada. It was really tough. It was really emotional. And so making a decision that it became too personal and I was too angry and had to really focus on healing. So what do? I go and do my PhD and using that as a way to heal. And I did. I went into hiding for a couple of years to work on that. And the focus was on the, you know, what does holistic health mean to Haudenosaunee people, and specifically in Nakwasasne was my the community that I chose, the Mohawk community of Nakwasasne, and so it was a real grounding for me to meet with our elders and to ask the questions, what makes us healthy, and finding out, well, it is because when we practice our own laws. When we practice our own laws, that's what makes us healthy. And then the questions of, okay, well, if that makes us healthy, what happened to us? What happened to, all of the impacts from, the focus was on resource development. And, what happened to our holistic health? What caused all of the disruption? So it was a really, again, you know, that it was like that path, I guess, into, again, back to healing and using our own laws. We have our own traditional healing methods, and identifying those and our relationship to the water and relationship to the land and, you know, that direct connection. And that's where our healthiness comes from, not just, you know, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual, but also the grounding to our land and water and all of creation. So it became a whole, it was an amazing journey. It has been an amazing journey, and just everybody that I've met, you know, along the way who led me into that, you know, I learned from them and they taught me a lot about those responsibilities to others and to other, like you said, but those coming behind, those who are also trying to figure things out. And I've always been really open about what I've learned and open about sharing that knowledge and being able to understand situations that are beyond our control, and you know, the impacts of colonization and genocide and everything that we're having to deal with today. And we're right in the midst of coming, you know, coming out of all of that trauma, and our people are standing up now. People are standing up and demanding, making demands and staying connected and really focusing on the next generations. So I'm really, some people think, oh, it's such trauma, to be right in the midst of where we are right now. But it's like, when you think about what our ancestors had saved for us, and thinking about, you know, the future, and that we still have our laws, we still have our language, we still have our ceremonies, everything that helps us with our healthiness, and to give thanks to them all of the time, and those who have been able to maintain it today, to be able to, you know, have our ceremonies that we've always had, you know, our language speakers and ceremonial people and our faith keepers and our chiefs and our clan mothers to maintain our laws. It's really powerful. It's a really powerful space to be in today.
Yeah, most definitely. And the fact that we still have people, you know, knowing that we still have people doing this means the ancestors are always with us, you know, like they walk with us. They're there when people are, you know, doing their recitals, in their ceremonies, when they're doing their practices, or when they don't know that, but they're taking the time to learn it or trying to learn their language. Like no matter what stage we're at in decolonization, what really gives me hope is that we're actively engaged in it. We're trying, you know, we can't be faulted for being colonized. That's definitely no fault of our own, but all of the beautiful ways in which we're trying to come out of it with the help of the people who were able to retain it, that's beautiful, that's amazing, and that's really the hope for the future.
Yeah, for sure. I see that with what's happening with the young people who are at the 1492 Landback Lane. Like it's just a really it's and it's not just there. It was what happened, you know, in 2006 with Gun Estado and, you know, everybody taking that responsibility that that we've always had and really acting on it, really, you know, taking on those responsibilities. And I know that Skylar and Tawny and all of the others at the Landback Lane have really, you know, identified the, and have lived through also Gun Estado and knowing, you know, what's required and taking those risks and just doing it, you know, just being there on the front lines. And so it's really powerful, you know, in this their generation especially.
Do you think that the Canadian public truly understands the risks that people take when they go on the front line? Because, you know, you've got the police boards calling them terrorists and government officials saying they're rogues, you know, always trying to vilify us. So that's nothing new. We've land defenders, water protectors, even just Indigenous people in general, we've always been targeted as threats to national security. But do you think Canadians, even allies, truly understand the risks that people take when they take up that responsibility to go on the front lines and risk their personal safety?
I think some do. You know, we have lots of allies, lots of those who are, and I think they've been educated. That's where I see the difference, are the ones who are educated, who have learned about the true history, who have learned about our relationship to this land and this territory. And but I don't think all Canadians understand. I don't think all people understand because the education system didn't allow them to learn about it. And I think that's where the fault, you know, of colonization, of even how the education system works and how, you know, the true history hasn't been taught in the education system. And I think that's where I also see some shifts happening, that in some places they are. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, individual teachers that are taking the time to educate about the truth, about treaties, about Indigenous peoples' relationship to, you know, this land and territory and Turtle Island, and being able to teach it in a respectful way. But that's I would say that's a minority right now, and that's been part of the problem. Part of the problem is that, you know, how come people don't know who Haudenosaunee people are? How come people don't know about the Haldimand Tract, even those towns and cities that are along the Haldimand Tract? Why don't people know that history? How come as Haudenosaunee people, we've known that as soon as we're born, you know, about our history and what we've been taught about our treaties and treaty rights and relationship with other peoples. So I think that there's so much systemic racism, and even thinking about the media and even how the media portrays you know, our people and just the whole racist, dichotomy and how people talk about, you know, who we are. That's been ongoing since colonization as well. And that's, you know, that's taught. The racism is taught from one generation to the next and until they actually learn about the truth. I think that changes how people think about our relationship, because, you know, racism is violent and it causes so much violence. And so that to me is you know, part of my job now, part of my role is to educate, and I'm educating law students. So, you know, I've already seen and felt the shifts and the changes that are occurring in the law school. And, you know, people are learning about Haudenosaunee law. They're learning about Cree law. They're learning about Anishinaabe law from those of us who know it, who are raised in it. So it's a really, so far it's been a really powerful process to see, you know, students go through, start out understanding, and then, you know, coming out, and we'll have that knowledge. So there could be potential judges at some time or politicians. So with that background, it changes the way that they understand, and we actually have different courses that we're teaching. And we have myself and Professor Jill Rogan, who's a criminal law expert. We're both co-teaching an experiential course. So we have five students who have been working on the ground with the Land Back Lane group and the land protectors, and really putting things out there in the social media, and you know, doing the research and some legal research and background to help out some of the legal research for the team. So it was, it feels good to know that you know, that they will come out with that understanding that would have been different from other generations without that knowledge.
What I really find so exciting is, you know, you go to the law school and then all of a sudden we've got all of these, you know, teams of law students, and they're working on the ground and they're fundraising and they're putting on events. And you and I have been in some of those events, and it's just massive public education, but for a purpose. You know, it's for a purpose, for action. So not just for information, it's not for entertainment purposes. It's literally, here's what you need to know. Now that you know, let's put this into action. And we're not just preaching it, we're actually doing it. So you are reshaping the role of lawyers, the role of law, from, you know, this ancient view that they just come to, you know, court in this adversarial situation and everyone represents each other's views and go away. But it's actually action on the ground. It's preemptive, it's holistic, it's being part of the community. It's a wonderful way to look at advocacy and being a lawyer and being a law student and what their responsibilities are, as opposed to the, you know, the really old idea about it just being for individuals and, you know, getting a job mm-hmm. or making a living, that this is really impacting people's lives in this way.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you can see when, right from day one, you know, when we first see the, you know, the students coming into, well, before this year, seeing students coming into the law school and the excitement. And then once they start understanding, because they're not quite sure, when they know that they have, it's a mandatory course, Indigenous Legal Orders, they're not quite sure what the course is going to be. And then once they start understanding that it is directly related to Indigenous people's laws, coming from our territories and our land and our, you know, the way that we relate to all of creation. And they see the whole different way of thinking about law, and that it becomes a real grounding for them. So every Friday morning, they know that they're going to be led by an elder who does an opening and grounds them, that it's actually very different than any other, you know, law course where there's nothing like that. And then also to, you know, to the end of the class, and when they've learned so much, and they, because it's an emotional, our laws are very emotional. And so when, you know, they have that emotional grounding as well, they want more. And that by the end, they're saying, is this it? Is this, you know, are we going to have more in upper year courses? And so we're working on that now. So we are going to develop very specific courses in upper year. So, but just seeing that, you know, as they go through their 3 years and just the eye opening and the light bulbs going on and their awareness is powerful. And I really am happy about that, about their and not everybody, like, mm-hmm. it there's still some real, you know, some resistance to it and some real you know, how can this be, you know, this can't be this way, but because they've been so ingrained in what they've been taught. But I would say overall, you know, in the last, so this is going into my fourth year, at Windsor Law and teaching Haudenosaunee law specifically, has been very powerful and very making those connections with students, especially, you know, the development of these experiential courses at Windsor Law, to be able to, you know, to also to mentor, you know, mentor the students. All of them are women, young women in this course. That Jill and I are co-teaching. So you can really see the, I guess their understanding of our laws. And then they start questioning, well, if this is the way it is, according to, Haudenosaunee law or Indigenous law, then how come this judge over here is acting the way he is and saying the things that he's saying, because they were directly involved in the hearing, the injunction hearing. And they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe, you know, what the judge was saying, what the judge ordered, and, you know, not allowing Skylar to present his evidence in the court. And, you know, they're saying, what precedent, what part of civil procedure is he following? And I say, he's not, he's not, he's just, it's his court. It's his order. And it's just, it's the way that the realities of the courts and laws and judges have been able to totally, eliminate, annihilate any voice of Indigenous people.
It's so incredible. I mean, they're really lucky to have you, because not only are they learning Haudenosaunee law from an actual Haudenosaunee person, but they're also learning about law in the lived actual context and how it rolls out on the ground. And there is literally nothing more eye-opening than educating people about the real history and the real truth, and then let them then watch a court with those eyes, because then you they can't help but see it differently. Even if they're resistant to the teaching, once they know, then it's like, wow, the injustice, the grave injustice is just so obvious. It's just sitting right there. It's just about giving people the background information so that they can see it in that way that hasn't been ruined by, you know, the national myth and colonization and racist ideologies that's so ingrained they don't even know that it's racism until they are given the tools so that they can actually see it themselves. And part of this, I guess, you know, we're talking about, you know, education and of students and us being a part of it and all of this lived education. But there are some elements in our society, and I would say every level of government and government officials, who know exactly the history around 1492 Land Back Lane. I mean, the federal government, the provincial government, and the local municipalities all know what the Haldimand Tract deed is. They all know that it's not a claim that it belongs to Six Nations. They all know that what they're doing is wrong, but they continue to keep making the exact same decisions. And we know that it stems in large part from racism, but it also stems in part from, you know, this generation of power and wealth at any cost, regardless of whether they have the right to do it. And, you know, given that we know that it's not just about education for public officials, how important is it that people like you and your students and allies like me and other people wrap our arms around Skylar and Micah and all of the people at 1492 Land Back Lane and support them in whatever skills, ways, and talents that we have?
That's really important. It's like sending a really positive, like positive energy. Like to me, energy is like, has a huge impact. So when we have all of this like real negative racist energy around us, it's like when you throw that love over here, you know, throw that that kindness and compassion, and it makes a huge difference. Like the more prayers that are being sent, the more, like if you can't come here and a lot of people aren't able to come, that sending that real good energy, you know, is felt. And you know, that's one way to help, our, you know, the prayers, the ceremonies, the, like I said, the love and the kindness is felt. But also, you know, they're starting a winter camp now, so sending all of the winter gear, anything that can be used in the winter time. You know, there's a whole fundraising effort, sending, you know, the funds that's needed. So there's what the total number is now of land defenders who have been criminalized. So they all have to hire, lawyers. So, you know, both Skylar and Micah and Tawny and Courtney, the ones who are right in the midst of it all, and all of them being charged now, you know, and they feel responsible, you know, almost that responsibility for everyone else who have also taken on that that responsibility to protect the land and the territory, and they become criminalized. You know, they're raising the funds for the criminal law lawyers, right? And people don't realize how much they cost. Lawyers do cost a lot of money because of, you know, the skills that they have, and the skills that are required to help them through that process. And that's a long process. Again, you know, a whole colonial process of, you know, adversarial, violent process. So, you know, with over 30, maybe even up to 40, 40 land protectors who have been criminalized, if they haven't paired up with another lawyer, that's 40 lawyers, 40 legal representation in every, because it's individualized as well, right? And every individual goes through the process. That costs a lot of money. And also now with the civil side and the injunction hearing and Skylar being ordered to pay all of the other lawyers' costs, which is ridiculous. that would help to address all of that. So, but the money and the resources and everything, to me, even, that's really, really helpful. But I still feel that the positive energy is also what helps, what helps us to have to deal with this on a daily basis. And, I'm here in the community, and there's always worry, right? Because we're living in this police state over here where the OPP are all around the whole community. And it's like, I don't want to use this kind of mentality, but, like the Wild West, mm-hmm. right? And it goes right back to the historical, where there were direct military attacks on our people and, killing our people off, right, with their guns, because we didn't have guns. And so, that to me was part of, it's still the same, only in a different scenario. It's frustrating and it's worrisome all of the time. Like, this happens all day long, every day. And thinking that, maybe that you're being followed, you're being tracked, and those who are on the front lines are being tracked. We know that there's all this, drones and pictures being taken and, all of that, however that whole colonial system works, and the racist identification of us as terrorists, as criminals. It's harsh. Like, that's pretty harsh. And our babies see that, right? Our young people see that. And so it's difficult to, have to try to teach them to maintain having a good mind, and maintain our own well-being when all of that's happening on the outside, and just the instigation that they do. And that's just so, like I said, it's so negative, so violent. And, and so we're really pushing for, maintaining that peace and maintaining that love and kindness, trying really hard to maintain that. But it gets difficult a lot of times, and that's when that help from the outside helps, when we have that, that support.
Well, one of the things that has always struck me, being from the Mi'kmaq Nation, is the way Haudenosaunee peoples, and it doesn't matter which community, whether it's, Six or Akwesasne or Ganawage, are always grounded in the great law of peace and love and peace. Like, the ultimate objective is always love and peaceful relations. And you can see that in the land defenders, in how they've been there for 112 days now. They've engaged in feasts. They've played games of lacrosse. They sit around and tell stories. They have concerts. I mean, none of that represents anything other than love and peace and community and tradition. And I think the Canadian public has seen that because we know at the same time, while I mean, clearly it must be quite a job to try to maintain like positivity when you're surrounded by the state, which has weaponized, has spared no expense to weaponize every tool it has against us simply because we're Native. Because we know if this was an issue between two businesses, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But it's because of us. And I guess one of the things I admire about you is that you have been in love and peace and the strength of your culture. You have been meeting the state in every forum. So you're, you know, you're grounded in your traditions, and that's a form of resistance. You're mentoring other people to come up behind you and inspiring people like me, which is another form of resistance and empowering others. You're confronting them here in Canada's courts, but you've also been at the United Nations and around the world. You literally don't give Canada a break. You're just like, okay, you're going to create another form and another tool, and you're going to weaponize something else. Well, I will meet you in every place. And that is inspiring. Despite the challenges and the difficulties and the unfairness that it is to us, I am so thankful for people like you, Bev, that shows that we don't have to just pick one forum. We can literally meet them on every forum and challenge them until we are ultimately successful. And we do have wins along the way. And I think just the fact that 1492 Landback Lane, people have been there for 112 days, that like every day is literally a victory and a celebration. It's a reoccupation and a reconnection with the land. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for what you do, Bev, for all of us. And I think that's representative of the Haudenosaunee people, because one of the things I told Skylar, it's like in the middle of the OPP committing acts of violence, Skylar still finds time to post on social media and make statements about standing in solidarity with the Mi'kmaq on the East Coast or the Wet'suwet'en. Like, we still find time to hold each other up even when we're under attack. And I think that's one of the things I love about our people, but I love about you, because I know you will always be there for everybody else. And I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Pam. I know that I really believe in the strength of our ancestors. And I know that they're always with me, and like, no matter what I do, no matter where I go, and I hear them. I hear them all the time. And they're telling me to, you know, say this, you know, don't be afraid to tell Carolyn Bennett off, like tell her because you invited her here. You make her responsible for, you know, making those connections here in the community, and you know, and doing that in all different places and spaces, because that I carry that with me wherever I go. That's what I've been taught. I've been taught that we're all equal, that we're all the same, that we're, no matter where we go, no matter where I go, it's, you know, the same. I say the same thing everywhere that I go, the same message. And I still, you know, feel the strength of my ancestors with me all of the time, everywhere.
And we're so thankful, because when they walk with you, you're walking with us, and that means they're walking with us. And I think all of our ancestors are as united as we are now. You know, it's like, although we're separate sovereign nations, we've all come together with the same common foe. And it's just really beautiful to see how we all come together. And I really, you know, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to share your personal journey, because it is very personal, but it inspires other people, and for the work you're doing to help people at 1492. So, Niawan, and thank you to all of the listeners as well for listening, but not just listening, for learning, for sharing these podcasts and videos, for sharing the information. I'll make sure also to post all of the links about 1492 Lambach Lane, the list of supplies they need, how you can contribute to fundraising, and other things, other ways you can support by sharing documents and in the media and in every way you can support and the positive energy. And we will keep track of what's happening at 1492. We will keep working in solidarity. And thank you everyone for tuning in to the Warrior Life podcast. Till next time, keep living a warrior life. Wallaliag.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.